Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, welcome to Trek Talking and Beyond. I'm your host, Uncle Jim, and with me, as usual, is my co-host, Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How are you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm not doing too bad. We have some heat up here in Vermont, but we'll make it through. And we have a special show planned for you guys tonight. If you guys tuned in last Thursday, we had an unbelievable premiere, and we had the pleasure of talking with none other than Chase Masterson, Mrs. Ferengi, I guess, is, Mrs. Grand Nagus is what she identified herself as from Deep Space Nine. She was a doll, and Garrett Wong from Star Trek Voyager, and Gerald Freed, who is, I believe, the last living composer from Star Trek, the original series. He wrote a lot of the music that we've all grown up listening to. And what all three of those guys have in common, I'm going to tell you, they all worked on a brand new sci-fi parody called Unbelievable. And you guys can go back and check out that show if you'd like, but we have with us right now, live on the phone, Steven and Angelique, who are the writer, director, and one of the producers from the movie Unbelievable. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing great. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. We're doing good. Thank you.
And Angelique was the sole producer of the film.
The sole producer.
Yeah, she was she was the one that did the whole thing. So yeah, you're well, if you want to know about this film, you're talking to the right two people.
Well, I don't think she did the whole thing. I think you had a little bit to do with it being the writer director, though, right?
Yeah, well, I did, but the producing of it, you know, the actual putting all the actors together and getting them to the set and putting all of the whole package together, that's what the producer does, and that's a huge thing.
We work together. We have a lot of stories. It was an experience to remember for this lifetime and many lifetimes.
Let me ask you. I don't know, 30 or 40 Star Trek. Well, I don't want to use the word. I was told by Dave that we can't use the word Star Trek, but actors that we would know from.
Well, okay, we won't use Star Trek either.
I know there was a lot of actors that Star Trek fans such as myself would recognize. How's that? Does that get around it?
That's great.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah. There was a lot of actors in this that were familiar to many of us. How did you go about rounding up all this awesome talent and getting them all together to make this film? That must have been a tremendous undertaking.
Yes, it definitely was. Well, it wasn't a Star Trek. It wasn't a Star Trek film at first. Steve, my husband, was just doing this film to get his feet wet, per se. And, you know, he was working on the film, and he was working, unfortunately, with a group of people who they were taking advantage. Like, that's something new in the industry, but it's not. And they were taking advantage of him, and I kept seeing it, and he asked me to produce this film, and of course I said no, because I had other things to do, but I kept on seeing him being taken advantage of, which is pretty normal in this industry. And so I started working on it, and initially we didn't have any Star Trek actors or previous Star Trek actors, but we ended up meeting one actor first from TNG. And when he saw it, he was like, "Are you serious?" He thought it was our script is, you know, a parody, it's a comedy, and he's used to getting, dramatic pieces, and he didn't understand it. He said, "Are you for real?" And then we said, "You know, it's a comedy," and he's like, "Oh, I get it, of course I'll do it." And that was Michael Dorn, and Michael Dorn introduced us to the Surtis. And then it just kind of went from there. And as Steve, my husband, uses the term, we couldn't be halfway pregnant. And we just kept hiring Star Trek actors. We never intended for it to be this many previous Star Trek actors, but it ended up being that way. Towards the end, we had a Star Trek or previous Star Trek actors ask us to be in the film. So it just worked out that way. And then, of course, we were introduced to a composer who worked on another Star Trek entity, and that was not the right fit for us. And we were lucky enough to hire Gerald Fried, the last living composer of original Star Trek, which is apropos for us because we're TOS fans, like major TOS fans. So it was such an honor to work with Gerald. He's funny, he's sharp, he's everything, and super talented. And I mean, we have so many stories about that time too, but we were just really lucky. We were lucky, and it just was meant to be the way that it was meant to be. We did meet some actors at conventions, and that was after agents, Hollywood agents and managers said, excuse my expression, they said, who the hell are you and why are you calling me? And so we were like, okay, well, we'll go to conventions. We'll present our work, and we did. And actors also from there started saying, yes, I'll be in your film. And, you know, it just kind of went on from there.
Yeah, sometimes you make your best connections at Star Trek conventions. I have the trailer for the movie here that I'm going to play for you guys. The movie is available on digital download right now, so you guys can download it and watch it. Our phone number here, we are
on Amazon Prime,
is 646. Yep, we're live. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. If you've had the opportunity to see Unbelievable, or if you attended the virtual red carpet premiere and you'd like to call and share some stories or just say hello or just ask a question, please do. We'll be with you for the next hour. Once again, that number is 646-668-2433, and you can find a link to the show right on our Facebook page. So here it is, guys. This is the trailer that we got from David to play. We played this on our show last week, but I'm going to play it again because you guys are with us.
2 weeks.
And this is two weeks and a half ago.
I'm old
and senile. God, Charles, you know how it is. So here it is, the trailer for Unbelievable.
In a world where the world is searching the world for someone to save the world, there is only one in the whole world that has this world on a string.
Okay, Charlie, I'm in. What now?
Soon I will take over their planet with my army of plants.
They are the first wave of a massive invasion force headed for this planet at this very moment. This is a national emergency.
Mr. President, I've got to ask you.
Well, then spray something on the damn thing.
Where did all the people go?
What the hell is happening to us?
I know what'll happen if something goes wrong up there. It'll be the end of the program.
I thought we had 80 more minutes.
That program!
Don't flush till we're over the ocean.
Years later, and he's still pissed.
Oh!
Captain Snorts, release the hounds on his cray cray ass.
We'll be right back.
Wow. So I got to say one thing, guys. When I saw that trailer, when Dave sent it to me and I watched it, the scene with the Gorn, I lost it with the scene with the Gorn, with the puppet, and the Gorn throws a rock at him. And he's like, 50 years, and he's still pissed. And then that you cut to the side, and who is sitting in the chair holding a Gorn head? Bobby Clark himself, who played the actual Gorn in the episode. Which I thought was, I that was spectacular. I love that scene.
Thank you.
We went out to Vasquez Rocks and we shot. I mean, it's really only like 26 seconds in the film, but I mean, we went out there for a full half day, and Bobby was feeling a little bit under the weather at the time, but. We told him that we were going to do this, and we did it, and he was so grateful that we had, actually kind of held up our production, waiting for him to feel a little better, and so we did that, and I mean, it was like, we wanted to bring the Star Trek feel to this thing, this is a parody. And so we're covered under parody law, and we're not taking the intellectual property from Paramount. There aren't Vulcans and Romulans and Klingons there. Actually, the Gorn was probably the closest thing we did to what Star Trek had done, and we ended up calling him Don Gornelius.
Junior.
Yeah.
And you're actually talking to Don Gornelius Jr. My wife was in the Gorn suit.
Oh, you're the Gorn?
No, he's lying. It was him. It was him. It wasn't me.
No.
Don't lie, Steve.
It was her.
You know, don't lie to Uncle Jim. You know that was you.
I have pictures. Oh. I have pictures.
I was Don Gornelius Jr. I do it with pride. It's one of my favorite episodes of the Arena.
I think every Star Trek fan loves Arena. The Gorn is such a classic Star Trek alien, and to see him in the puppet. I loved the puppet. Yeah. The puppet to me stole the whole show. He was great. He was a great character. I just loved that puppet.
we have a story behind the puppet. What happened was, obviously, we were trying to get William Shatner at one point. And he was busy on some other things, and they were telling us, you'll have to pay him, six figures a day and that sort of thing. And so that was actually one of the jokes in the movie at the beginning of the film. We talked about my day rate is six figures a day. But I came up with this idea, because I was an old Thunderbirds Fireball XL5 type fan. And I remember I said, what if we made him a puppet, like a little marionette? and I remember running the idea by Nichelle Nichols, who was one of our co-producers on this. And she just laughed for like 20 minutes. And she said, that's way funnier than having, like an 80-year-old guy running around doing this. And so we went over to the Kyoto Brothers the next day.
I didn't believe him because he told me in the middle of the night.
And we went over to the Kyoto Brothers, and they had about two or three bodies left over from Team America World Police. And so we said, well, we'd like you to build one that looks like, the 1960s Captain Kirk. And so they did that for us. And it was probably cost us, I think, $22,000. And it was the best and probably the best investment we've made on the whole film.
And what I thought was hilarious? How the puppet did Shatnerese. I was laughing so hard when here's this puppet doing William Shatner. It was hilarious.
Yeah, that was Kevin Carlson. Kevin was one of the puppeteers, and he provided the voice, and he was very good at it. We owe him a lot as far as the comedy of the whole thing, and you know, it was quite a process to bring that puppet, because, you know, normally puppets are usually in the picture with other puppets, and humans are not usually interacting with puppets quite as much as they do in our movie. We had to constantly be thinking, how do we inject this puppet into a scene with these humans? And I think part of the comedy of the whole thing is that the actors are playing it straight with this puppet, and they're not, you know, questioning the fact that they're answering to a puppet.
Yeah, and all the puppeteers were really neat. I mean, they loved puppeteering, and a lot of them have history. Like, they were, I think it was Barkley who was inside of, David Barkley was inside the body of Jabba the Hutt. They worked on Yoda. I mean, they've done puppeteering for decades. And so there was so much history behind film history, film puppeteering history that they had behind it all. So we were in really great hands because they knew exactly what they were doing. There were times where we were at this estate in Malibu and they had to use strings, obviously, with the puppet. And it was like a 30-foot, you know, string set to actually maneuver him in the manner in which we needed him.
Well, they did a spectacular, spectacular job. And with all the talent you had in the movie, the puppet stole my heart. He was the man.
Aww.
I just thought he was just wonderful. And my favorite scene is when Walter runs him over in the fire truck.
There's a story behind every scene in this film. But Walter, we met Walter on the set of Renegades. And I said, you know, I'd like to hire you for our film, Unbelievable. I said, I just need you for a cameo. And he said, well, we kind of hammered out the price. And then he said, well, what would I be saying? And I said, you're going to say two words. You're going to say warp speed. And he said, well, what am I doing? And I said, you're running over the body of Captain Kirk. And he said, I would have done it for free.
He said
you should have told me that at the beginning. I would have worked for free.
That and the Gorn were my two favorites. And the other thing I really liked was the Masterpiece Theater opening with Robert Picardo. That was you guys did a spectacular job on this film. You really, really did.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That's so sweet.
The Masterpiece Theater scene, we actually showed during our virtual event the other day. We actually showed some of the outtakes from that, and he had done quite a few different endings and different beginnings, but there was that one time where he actually knocked it straight into the fire, and we just lost it on set. We just thought that was so funny, because we weren't planning. We were planning to just cut away and, you know, just fake it like he had knocked it in there. We didn't think he could actually do it.
But he did it.
And
he just went right on it.
And that was the whole point, that the film is supposed to be so bad that it's trying to self-immolate itself.
That was hilarious. And, Charles, I've been hogging up enough time. Did you have any questions before? Because I'll just keep on going. So I want to give you an opportunity to ask some questions.
Oh, definitely. Especially listening. I remember him sitting, I think it was that bicycle. He was sitting on that bicycle at the beginning on some of the outtakes.
I think it was a rocking horse.
Yeah, that was a rocking horse. It was funny to see Edgar Allan Poe but how did it go for him to get show up so many other times in the show, in the movie?
Different roles he's talking about.
Oh, well,
yeah.
That was, I mean, we shot the scene that he does with Chase in the jet where they're Russians. He played Boris and she played Natasha. That was the actual first scene that we ever shot in the film. And then later in that afternoon, we shot the Masterpiece Theater scene. That was the second scene that we ever shot. So we had Bob on the set for the full day. So we got those two out of the way. And then we had, as we went, we had another actress that was going to play the lead character, but it just didn't work out scheduling wise and other contractual reasons. And so Chase actually said, you know, that she would take over and do that. We hadn't planned to have Chase play both the Natasha role and Connie Garrison, but she did a great job with it. And,
yeah, she was meant to play that role in our eyes.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes things don't work out because they're not supposed to, but Connie Garrison couldn't have been played by anyone else. She was exceptional, like exactly what we wanted her to be. So we were really lucky that we had Chase in that role.
And then the final day was we were in Thousand Oaks at the Thousand Oaks Civic Center, and we were shooting the hospital scene about, I think, seven different actors that were kind of popping in and out very quickly. We had Dominic Keating and
Casey Biggs.
Casey Biggs.
Patty Yazidaki.
Max Grodinchek and
Brenda Bakke.
Well, anyway, we were also planning to have Brent Spiner. Brent was going to come in and play Dr. None Too Soon there at the very end. And Bob Picardo was on the set that day because we were doing the award ceremony scene on the same stage up above. And so because Brent wasn't able to make it that day, Bob ended up filling in for Brent Spiner.
And he did a great job, too, I might add.
Yeah. Now I got the spy plane explanation. Now I understand the story with it. The Boris and Natasha. Okay, definitely that's a good one there.
Yeah, we wanted to try and get him to play his hologram character again, and so we kind of hit him with this blue light when he popped up between her legs there, and so he was underneath the carriage of the thing, and he had to pull himself up. It was a little difficult for him to do it, but, you know, it came out really well and, it worked out for us.
Yes, that was definitely a funny shot. How's the story of getting like Snoop Dogg to show up in a movie like this?
Wait, what did you say?
Perfect character for that.
Well, Snoop Dogg.
Yes, Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg was actually we actually had another actor that was playing the role of Le Grand Boucher originally, and then we took some of the footage that we had, and we went to Las Vegas at the Creation Show one year. We were across the street at the theaters there,
Brendan Theaters,
and. We showed it to a focus group there, and then we went to Atlanta and we showed it to a Dragon Con audience, and they were happy with the Star Trek people. but they just weren't happy with this other actor playing the lead bad guy.
Yeah.
And so we started rethinking it, and we said, now who would be the best actor to be a you know, the leader of the plant army?
Yeah.
And
we liked the actor that we had before. He was a nice person, but if it wasn't working well with the Star Trek, you know, audience, which is who we made it for, it wasn't gonna work. And actually with Snoop Dogg, we were driving back from Atlanta, from Dragon Con, and I unfortunately had someone that was a partner as we were discussing who we would, you know, try to hire for this particular role, tell me, oh no, Snoop Dogg will never work for you. And I was like, oh really? You know, sometimes people tell you that you can't do things, and you know, they really shouldn't tell you that. And you know, that's really, you know, I really thought about it. And you know, we had thought about Snoop Dogg a long time before that. He was actually on a very old list of ours, but we thought, you know, as new filmmakers, how are we really going to get him? But then, you know, we had filmed all of this work. We had done all of this stuff. We had, you know, we had recorded our soundtrack. And I just said, you know what? I'm a producer. I'm going to call. I'm going to look him up and call. And that's exactly what I did. I looked him up and I called his manager, and I told him about our film and what we wanted to do. And that was it. That was all she wrote. We ended up getting a meeting with him and talking to him, and he's a major Star Trek fan. I mean, he is a stone cold Trekkie, and no one would know.
Oh.
You would not know. I'm going to tell you what happened. We went to his compound that he has in Inglewood, and we're walking in and we're thinking, he has this big mural of Star Trek, you know, TOS on the wall, and we're like, no, he wouldn't have done this for us. Who the hell are we? You know, he couldn't have done that. And then we start walking down the hallway, and there's spaceship, there's battleship, and these are conference rooms, right? And then we get to this other bigger room. It's called the mothership. And the manager's like, oh, it's right in here. So we go into the mothership, and there's Snoop Dogg, and we're in a room that looks like the bridge of the Star Trek Enterprise. There's colors, and there's a captain's chair.
Oh,
wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's like, what? It was, you know, first of all, we're meeting Snoop Dogg, who, you know, he's a legend in and of itself. He has great music. But then he's a Star Trek fan, and that's when you just get the chills, and you're like, oh, wow, this was not our, you know, you kind of feel like there's divine intervention. He was the one who was meant to play this role.
Yeah.
And, of course,
Yeah.
He got to be Nichelle Nichols' son. He got to be in a scene with Nichelle Nichols, which must have been awesome for him.
Yes.
Yeah, we actually had a letter from Nichelle asking him if he would play in the film, because she wanted to do a scene with him. And I think that may have been one of the main driving forces that brought Snoop to the table.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, when did you guys actually start working on the film? I mean, did the
like
coronavirus
18
put
18 million lives ago
put a damper on it?
we started principal photography in May of 2013, and we shot the majority of the film in 2013. That was because we had to give some leniency to the main actors to allow them to cover conventions around the world and things like that. And they weren't just in LA all the time, you know? So we had to kind of pick and choose our times when we could get all three of the main leads together.
Right.
And, there would be sometimes we could get them for two or three days in a row. Other times we'd have to wait 3 months before they were back in town altogether. But by the end of 2013, we had shot the vast majority of the film. But we kept tweaking it, and we kept it kept evolving. There were a lot of other Star Trek actors that wanted to come in. I had to keep writing other scenes. They wanted to have a role with the puppet. And so there were several scenes. The scene that we had with the hazmat people, Armin Shimerman and Jeffrey Combs and John Billingsley.
And Dana Meyer.
Dana Meyer.
Oh.
And
Julie Warner.
And Julie Warner. We shot that in 2014. That was kind of an added scene that was not originally part of the script, but we felt like in order to give the viewer some context as to this plant invasion is taking over, we felt we needed that scene. And so we did that, and then of course Michael Madsen was living next door to where we were shooting Malibu.
Yeah.
And he was out on his back deck looking at us.
We thought he was going to come over and do a Kill Bill on us, but he didn't. Thank God.
He ended up calling the individual that we leased the home from. Saying, I want to get into that movie because he's a big Star Trek fan. And so I ended up writing another scene with he and Gary Graham and Vaughn Armstrong. He played the President of the United States.
Ah, okay.
Now,
so,
Stephen, when you go to write something like this, do you have an actor in mind when you write these scenes, or do you write the scenes based on the actors that are available? How do you go about, like Gary Graham, for instance? Do you write a scene for Gary Graham, or do you just write a scene and Gary Graham happens to be the one that gets that scene? What's your reasoning when you do something like that?
Well, I wrote that scene for Michael Madsen because I knew that he was the one coming in to play the president. I didn't know at the time I wrote it that Vaughn Armstrong and Gary Graham were going to be the ones we would get. Obviously when you set a date for shooting, then the other actors have to be available on that day. So, we ended up, contacting Vaughn. Vaughn was a friend of, Jeffrey Combs. And Jeffrey had recommended that we contact Vaughn. And then Vaughn said, I think Gary Graham would be good as the other guy. And so it was really kind of like that we'd have, like, you know, we'd hire a Star Trek actor, and then they would say, oh, well, you know, we should get this guy because they're all friends. You know, a lot of them know each other from conventions and different things that they do, and so, you know, they recommend each other for, you know, for jobs, and so it was kind of a, you know, like a kumbaya type of thing. A lot of them obviously knew each other, and they were all very comfortable, and they all seemed to enjoy their time on set.
Yeah, it definitely, there was definitely chemistry there, that's for sure. Definitely.
And to get Michelle Nichols so well before she retired.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, we have a special relationship with Michelle.
Yeah.
You know, we've known her since 2012. She's very, you know, important to us personally as well as professionally, but you know, we know her, you know, as Michelle Nichols, not necessarily as Lieutenant Uhura.
Right.
Michelle, we hired her to be an actress in the film, and you never know, you know, who's going to become friends. We have a lot of friends that, you know, come out of this film.
Yeah.
But Michelle is by far, you know, the most special one, and everyone pretty much knows that. She actually my husband and I, we weren't married, you know, in 2012, and we were getting married, and we were going to have a very, very private wedding, and Garrett Wong was actually at our wedding rehearsal dinner, and so was Nichelle, and then Nichelle gave me away in marriage to my husband and threatened my husband that he better not mess up because she knows where he lives. And she's been such an angel to our lives. You know, we have her as, you know, executive producer, co-producer, and it's because, you know, she's older. It's not like she did work. What she did was give us a tremendous amount of advice, kindness, you know, telling us, you know, look, you know, don't worry about this, moral support. You know, that's really what she offered our film, and it was really tremendous, you know, and she wanted to be a part of it and wanted to see its success, and we're always going to be grateful for her in that regard. You know, personally, you know, as you might see, I've stood up for her in court for an elder abuse situation that she has experienced, and you know, it's something that she asked of me to do way back in 2013. So, you know, I am one to keep my promises because I love people that I love. I love my friends. I love people that you know, have been tremendously kind to me. And I don't, you know, make light promises. So I've done what I've needed to do. And, you know, I continue to help other people who are suffering, you know, either elder abuse or incapacitated adults. But, you know, it's very painful for us, you know, both of us, because she was just as close to my husband as she was me. I mean, we had a different relationship because we're women, but, you know, being an older woman, I'm 50 years old. I don't need another mother, but she definitely came in there and stole my heart that way. And, so that's, you know, it's just kind of life when you produce a film like this. You know, there's some people are going to make a deep impact on you, and you have some things that you got to do for them, whether it's karma or fate or whatever it may be. But, you know, yes, Steve is right. She's not Lieutenant Hura to us. She's Nichelle, or Mama Nichelle. She's really an amazing woman. And if people really knew, like, how much she loves her fans. For me, like, that is such an example, you know, because we've been places, a whole bunch of different places, restaurants, we've been in Las Vegas, we go different places, and she will always stop and take a picture with someone or, you know, sign an autograph. And, you know, I've only seen her not do it once when she was actually food in mouth, you know, but she's just an amazing woman, and there's not a lot of people who've graced this earth like her. So, yeah.
Yep. I've somewhat met her twice at the Star Trek Las Vegas convention seen her in there mode to booth, but 17, 18, and 19. And she's always just so friendly in there. She may not make it on stage, but she's still out there greeting the fans.
Yeah.
I got one more question to throw out there. Was it writer, director? Who came up with the idea of the Guardian of the Edge of Forever?
My crazy husband.
Well, that whole scene, the scene with Snoop Dogg arriving, when we first shot that scene with the other actor, we were doing it in a more confined environment. It wasn't as large an area, and so we decided, okay, we're gonna expand the stage, if you will. We had much more area that we could use, and I wanted to give a very dramatic entrance to Snoop, and so I started thinking about different Star Trek episodes, and of course, City on the Edge of Forever is known as probably the absolute best of Star Trek. And so I said, well, I'll call him the Gardener of Frickin' Forever. And so we had him come through there, and it was a nice little call out to Star Trek. We have a lot of Easter eggs and from Star Trek.
You didn't tell him who played the
Well, the Gardener Frickin' Forever. We wanted it to give him a little bit of a New York attitude, so we actually hired Robert Davi to do the voice of the Gardener.
And then he's played in Stargate Atlantis and James Bond and
Die Hard.
Yeah. He always plays a bad guy.
So, and then that's when we came up with the Kribbles. the Kribbles are kind of like nappy-haired
Tribbles.
But they have Africans in their hair, and they've got attitudes. and my wife was both of those characters.
He's not telling you the truth. It was him.
No,
telling you.
she was Nene and Tete, and I was actually the voice of the horse. Captain Buttock Snorts. That was because when we added the horse, I'd actually met a woman in Las Vegas at the focus group we had, and we had showed her the film, and she remembered a line that I had in there that Kirk the puppet says, my horse will, you know, he wants to get some FaceTime too. And because he loves horses. And so I said, you know, we probably should put a horse in this thing. And so we got this little mini horse from a ranch out in Malibu. And we brought it in and...
brought him.
Yeah, him. And we dressed him up like Baylock from the Corbomite Maneuver. And so a lot of the lines that the horse says is pretty much straight out of the Corbomite Maneuver. And so, you know, I remember this puppet with the blue head and the long face. And so I said, well, what has a long face? Well, the horse has a long face. So we called him Buttock instead of Baylock. I wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger for the role, and we tried to get Arnold to do it, and we came close, but it just, you know, COVID happened, and I had already voiced the role so that our editor would be able to finish the editing on the scene for timing purposes, and my wife seemed to think that my voice was pretty good for
the
horse.
It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. I mean, we love Arnold Schwarzenegger, but I really loved Steve's voice because to me it was more the epitome of Baylock. It reminded me more the intonations that he had, and I just don't think that anyone else could have done it better. And then he and I were able to have a scene at the end with the cow and the horse.
Yeah,
together,
well, when he's drunk on. He's drunk on Kranya, which is Tranya, and so that was the whole point of the whole thing. It was kind of an homage to Baylock.
Yes.
And so that was what we were doing there. So, that whole scene was reimagined and redone once we hired Snoop Dogg.
Now with the COVID. Yep, go ahead, Charles.
Yeah, let me throw one more question. I would love to hear just once again the story, but we've done a lot with Gerald Freed, but what about bringing Emily Statton in for the closing credits in that song? That's a great song she did.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That is the story behind that too.
Yeah. She actually.
Well, I'm hoping for.
She wrote, arranged, and performed that song, and she's a really special artist, I would say, because, you know, that was our first soundtrack that we had ever recorded. We went to New Mexico and we recorded at Keller Hall at the University of New Mexico, with some of the best musicians in the nation. And it was a 29-live-piece orchestra. Gerald Fried was there. Dave Grusin was also on the keyboard. Dave Grusin is known for winning the Oscar for On Golden Pond. And Tommy Morgan was our bass harmonica player. And there were so many cool things that happened during that time because Tommy Morgan and Dave Grusin started jamming on stage Sanford and Son, because they were the ones who played Sanford and Son in the real TV show. And then, and then Tommy Morgan, he was the harmonica player in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. And Gerald Fried was friends with both of them. So we had, again, it's just blowing us away because there's so much history that came with our, and that Emily Stanton came in. Emily arranged, wrote, and performed that song. And she came in and literally took all of the notes from the composer and then another arranger who arranged the song a little bit differently, as if she had practiced it at least 20 times the night before. She just came in like an expert and just did it. And it was just, you know, the musicians were excited. They loved her song. I personally love her song. I sing it as well. But, you know, Steve, you can share it too. It was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Emily is actually the granddaughter of one of our larger investors. And that was part of the deal that, you know, he'd do the investment if Emily was allowed to sing. And so I didn't know that she was going to be able to sing anything at all, but I wasn't going to turn that investment down either. So I said, okay, fine. You know, I figured, well, I could just make a joke out of it if it's no good. And so I remember they sent then the MP3, and I listened to it, and it was like we were at the finals of American Idol. I was like, oh, my God, this girl is fabulous.
Yeah.
So we recorded her in New Mexico, and Dave Grusin came up to me after we had done it. And he said, you know, I hope you realize that you've got a hit record in your movie. And I said, well, no, I didn't recognize that. And he said, that song is the best of Disney. And he said, every tweener girl in America is going to want a copy of that song. And so he says, it would be best for you to release that song before the movie comes out. So we did. The song is out on iTunes and Spotify and Pandora and all around the internet now. We're talking about after today. But so that is part of the soundtrack as well, Gerald's music and Emily's music. So we have her single, we have an orchestral version of it, kind of almost like an elevator music type of thing.
We have a music video as well.
We have a music video, and then
with a puppet in it with her.
Yeah, and then the end credit music was a remix of both the orchestral and the song, and that's pretty special music. So, yeah, we're really happy with the music in the film.
Yes, definitely.
I wanted to ask you guys, before we run out of time and have to let you guys go, I wanted to ask you, when we had Chase and the rest of them guys on, they were telling us all about this virtual red carpet premiere that you guys were going to have because of the COVID. You couldn't have a traditional red carpet premiere. What was that like doing a virtual red carpet premiere, and how did that go down for you guys? Was it everything you expected?
we were the most under the gun because the camera was on us and the camera doesn't blink, you know. So we were out there for 7 hours. I think we had 1 5-minute break.
Yeah.
But we were there for 7 straight hours talking with the actors. The technology was okay. It had to have some glitches in it. There were times where we couldn't hear the actor, or then all of a sudden they would come back on, and And the schedule, we had a fairly exacting schedule that we had already mapped out, a kind of a run of show. And I had that in my lap, and we were looking, I was looking at it, and then they were like texting Angelique sitting next to me, and she's getting, she said, well, he's ready now. And so we had to like jump like 2 hours ahead for an actor that wasn't supposed to be in front of us for another 2 hours.
Right. And the technology, I mean, it's, you know, when you have times such as these, you know, we're in the middle of COVID, it's a pandemic, and we're trying to make things work and, you know, trying to find a new way to show film, because all of our great summer movies, they're not able to play. So there were some studios there watching us and seeing how we handled it. And, you know, it is what it is. We're just trying to find a new way to show film during a time where we're not allowed to go out to movie theaters and where we have to social distance. So, you know, we got some, you know, benefit out of it. I think the company did too. They treated us well, and, you know, we got, you know, some nice footage to share with fans with all of the interviews, you know, as to how the film was made. But I think halfway through is when they got better. They got much better at, you know, the audio and everything like that. But I think with technology, there's always going to be glitches at first, and, you know, getting everyone in, getting the fans in, getting the actors in. But I think overall, I mean, I liked the experience. I liked it because I like technology, and, you know, if we can figure out how to just be human, you know, I think that's a huge thing we've learned during COVID, is spending more time with our families, being home, knowing that you can work from home, but also technology is a huge part of our lives now. So we're trying to relate to it.
Yeah, now, you had sessions where you could actually sit down and ask an actor a 2-minute question and get a response right on the spot. How did that work out for you guys? Was that relatively difficult to work out?
Yeah, no, I think it worked out fairly well. I just, you know, we were sitting in a room, and we didn't really have access to anything else. That, like, if you were coming into the system, you had more access than we did. Because we were kind of like sitting in that room, and there was a little box in front of us, and they were listening to us. And so we were having to use texting on a phone to be able to know what the engineers were doing. So, you know, we would say, okay, let's see clip 34. And we'd have to just say, can we see clip 34, guys, and whatever, and just hope that they're listening and playing it, you know, for us. But I mean, as far as the Q&As, we heard that they went pretty well, but we did not have a chance to see those Q&As as they happened.
And we won't see those until probably next week when they give us, you know, all of the footage for it. But as far as we know, they went well. The actors were happy and the fans were happy. So that was all that was really important to us, that they could actually have the contact with the actors that they wanted to see.
So we have about 14 hours of new footage that we'll probably include in an extended DVD release, you know, a bit later on. But yeah, about 14 hours of other footage that, you know.
And we really tried to make it a variety show. We added a musical guest, you know, had two segments. Her name is Akilla. And that was nice. A lot of people like that too, just to switch it up a little, give people a mind break, and then to keep on going into the interviews with the actors. Oh, and the puppet broke into a couple of people's rooms, I heard. I don't know if anyone knows that.
I love the puppet.
Okay, I have to tell you this because you wouldn't know this, and this was just hilarious. The day before two days before we had training with all the actors on how to get into the system and how to get out. And so our puppeteers, they're just so crazy. Steve and I were taking shifts sleeping because we're working so hard planning this, right? And I get up in the morning, I run to the training with Addison Interactive and Yo Tribe, and there's all of these actors, and the puppet is sitting there with his own little actor, you know, Zoom session, and he's acting like he's listening to the training. I mean, if you knew what these guys did with this puppet.
Oh.
He's crazy.
That puppet is awesome.
Yeah.
So before we run out of time and have to say goodnight to you guys, are you working on anything currently that you want to let people know about?
Yes.
Just surviving.
Yeah. Trying to live.
Trying to catch up on sleep.
Yeah, but that's not happening. The sleep's not happening. No, we have other projects. We actually have a lot of other projects. You know, they're nothing like Unbelievable because Unbelievable is a parody. We have one other comedy, but Steve is also a novelist of Archangels of Dreamland and Archangels Grigori. Archangels of Dreamland is a sci-fi kind of a spiritual edge
action
adventure with in regards to the Roswell incident. So that is hopefully our next project. A lot of people come to us and ask us to work on their projects. So there's those things as well. But I'm really hoping, because as our company name is called Archangel Films LA, you know, we would love to get, you know, Archangels of Dreamland done next because it's such a significant feature. It's got a lot of characters in it, and it's about the real archangels as well and demons. So it's an interesting project. The other projects we have are social impact and, you know, deeper stories about, you know, real life characters. So,
and if we ever do a sequel to Unbelievable, it will be called Inconceivable.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
An exclamation point.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, guys, guess what? We've burned through our whole hour. So I just want to say thank you very much for making such an unbelievable film. It really is funny. And people have got to go out and see it. You'll love the puppet. The puppet is spectacular. And the Gorn scene is great. Walter running over, laugh out loud, funny. And you guys will love it. Where can guys... Anyone that's listening, if they want to get a hold of you guys on social media, how can they find you?
On Facebook, you can go to Official Unbelievable, the movie. And on Instagram, it's Unbelievable, M as in Mary, V, like at Unbelievable, M as in Mary, V. Then on Twitter, it's a diff, kinda, trek. On Amazon, they can go ahead and go to the Facebook page or just go straight to Amazon, type in Unbelievable, and then you can see Unbelievable. $9.99 for HD, $3.99 for HD to rent, $9.99 to buy. So there's that. And then, you know, additionally, we are going to have an Easter egg contest. We have 60 Easter eggs in the entire film specifically placed for people, only people who understand and know Star Trek. So we're going to have, we were just going to tell people, and we have this cute little thing to share with people, but we want to give people prizes for people who can figure out all of the Easter eggs.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. And I just want to say to Steven and Angelique, thank you very much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We're grateful for you too. Thank you so much, Charlie.
Thank you.
And it was a lot of fun. Unbelievable is a great film. You guys got to go out and see it. And I want to say thank you to my co-host for jumping in with us tonight, Charles. Thank you very much, Charles.
Oh, thank you for hosting, Jim. This was great.
It was fun. And I want to say thank you to each and every one of you guys listening around the globe. We couldn't do the show without you guys. So thank you very much. I'm Uncle Jim signing off. Be good to each other. Be safe. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.